Hey guys, what is going on? I want to do a quick intro for the podcast today. So I got a chance to talk to a friend of mine, Chris Weber from beaconship.com. So Chris is a digital marketing consultant, in particular has a background expertise in launching new franchises and new service businesses, mainly fitness businesses in different marketplaces. So I thought this would be a really interesting conversation. He's doing some consulting work with a big gym here in Atlanta. And I wanted to get him on the podcast in particular to talk about some of the things that he has done with some of these franchises. So in particular, he's worked with Functional 45, Title Boxing, and Orange Theory Fitness, most recently Orange Theory. And what I thought was interesting was that these are all membership-based recurring revenue businesses. So there's sort of like a certain number that you need to get up to in order for that to be then profitable. And it's very predictable going forward because it's recurring revenue. They're coming back every month, right? Which is something that I really feel like PT practices should drive towards. But what Chris specializes in particular is launch strategies to get you to that number as fast as possible. And if you are thinking of starting a practice, or if you've already started a practice but are in the beginning stages of that and you're not seeing that kind of uptick of patients and volume that you would like to see, there may be some simple launch strategies that you just haven't tried that are just going to be a little bit of boots on the ground and getting out there that Chris talks about. Is really interesting, simple strategies you can start implementing to really make some of those changes. So I hope you guys like this one. I thought this was fascinating. I'm really, I really got some good ideas as well from Chris when we go to, open up another practice eventually that we can do for launch strategies and just building that population up as fast as possible. So that's Chris Weber again. We had a fantastic talk with him of beaconship.com. Check him out. If you guys are interested, reach out to him. He was super approachable with me and always gets back really fast if you have any questions. So guys, enjoy this one and thanks for listening. So here's the question. How do physical therapists like us, who don't want to see 30 patients a day, who don't want to work home health, and have real student loans, create a career and life for ourselves that we've always dreamed about? This is the question, and this podcast is the answer. My name is Danny Matei, and welcome to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. What's up, guys? Doc Danny here with the PT Entrepreneur Podcast. And we got a buddy of mine, local guy from here in Atlanta as well. We just met up at a local gym here, the Training Room off the Beltline. If you guys are familiar with Atlanta, it's basically a walking path that has blown up and people love it in the city, but they've got a really sweet gym that's right off of the Beltline. It's Chris Weber, who is the founder of Beaconship. Chris is an entrepreneur, a digital marketer. He's a business consultant and primarily in the health and fitness business realm. So Chris, dude, thanks so much for jumping on the podcast today.
Hey, Danny. Thanks for having me. Glad we can connect.
Yeah, this is going to be fun, man. I'm really excited to learn some stuff from you. Before we do so, why don't you do this? Will you give everybody just kind of a background on, what you've done in the business world before we kind of delve into what your subspecialties are that we're going to talk about today?
Sure thing. I started as an entrepreneur, as a young little one, I'd say. Started washing cars when I was 14, realized I could make some more money than my friends making $6.50 an hour at the sandwich shop. And that kind of led me on my path for quite a while there. I had a full-blown auto detailing business in Southern California throughout college, ended up moving away from that and then heavily getting involved in health and fitness. And it was a passion project at first. I started from the very bottom, working in a gym, becoming a personal trainer, building up my book, then realized, I don't always look at myself as being a personal trainer. So where do I go next? Well, I love the fitness business. I saw the residuals and membership. I saw huge personal training contracts coming through the doors, and I wanted to understand how all that worked and what the moving parts were. So I got a job as a fitness manager, and then suddenly after that, doing pretty well with a couple different businesses, I was recruited by a private investor, and he had me join him with Title Boxing Club. So I was actually responsible for launching Title Boxing Clubs back in 2011, 2012, when they were first kicking off.
That's really cool. So but aside from your entrepreneurial ventures in the car washing scene, were you like the kind of kid that was always trying to sell stuff, or always trying to like do like little business of some sort, even growing up?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, everybody has their own start, I think, as being an entrepreneur. But, you know, when the neighbor said, I'll give you $5 to sweep my driveway, I was out there trying to figure out how to efficiently sweep a driveway.
That's so funny. I feel like, if people listen to this, it's almost a... You're like a weird little kid, and so was I. You know, like I remember my brother and I. We like one summer on this military base that we were living on in Augusta. We decided we're going to cut grass, and my brother does not like to really engage with people, and I have no problem with that whatsoever. So we decided our partnership was going to be he was going to cut the grass, and I was going to find people to pay us to cut their grass, and it was our dad's lawnmower, and so we didn't have any like equipment costs, right? It was a super super sweet business. And so I actually went around door to door and signed people up on these summer long contracts to cut their grass at a discounted rate for a contract versus like one at a time. And I got like all this business, and my poor brother was like stuck in the Georgia heat cutting all these yards. And we made out like bandits that summer, but I didn't do shit physically, and he did all of it, you know? So, you know, it's funny, like little stories like that where we, you know, you look back on it, and I think people just sort of maybe have an interest in that, and they're kind of, I don't know what it is. I'm not sure if it's a background. Do you come from a family of like entrepreneurs?
You know, it's funny. My mom's father, so my grandfather, worked for somebody else a long time in a deli in New York, and then saved a bunch of money, opened up his own thing, had one business partner. And that's really the only other entrepreneur in my entire family. No one really gave me that as an option actually growing up. I just kind of fell into it. I kept gravitating towards it. Even though everybody else said, do the pharmaceutical sales job, you'll make a killing.
Right, right.
So, it's quite interesting. Grew up more with the stable paycheck type mentality in my family.
Yeah. Well, everybody in my family's government. They're all like retired military. But I come to find out recently, it's funny what you find out about your grandparents when you're older. Yeah. And that, my grandfather, who, my mom's, father served in World War, II and Korean War, was in the Navy for like 30 years. And I was talking to him, he's like 93. And I asked him, I was like, oh, grandpa, you know, like, you know, should you go into World War II, like, you know, be patriotic? And he goes, no, he goes, I was selling alcohol, illegally at this, hotel I was working at. And I got caught by the cops, and they gave me an option. It was either go into the military or go to jail. And that's what happened. So maybe he didn't have a chance to actually become an entrepreneur because they sort of gave him an ultimatum.
Wow. Yeah. Look at that one.
I know. And you don't hear that when you're 10 years old. They don't want, that's not something your grandfather's going to tell you. But all right, let's get into, let's get into your specialty, which there's a couple of them. I mean, I got a chance to chat with you a little bit at Training Room, where you're doing some work with that gym right now. And, man, it was just fun. I feel like you and I could probably, you know, chat about business for a long time and be very content to do so. I would just find business fascinating, and I love to learn more about it. But you talked to me a little bit about the idea of launching businesses and launching new service or products within that business. So what is a launch in your opinion? Like what is that really defined as?
Yeah. So for me, you know, it started right away for me when I was contacted by the first investor who reached out and said, hey, I want you to run my business. And quite frankly, I wasn't really sure how to tackle that at that time because no one really gives you a blueprint for it.
How old are you at this time?
I'm in my mid-20s. So, you know, I had some business knowledge, but bringing a new brand to market without having a specific blueprint that lays it out for you was pretty interesting feat. So, you know, obviously we hooked up with a marketing company. Facebook ads weren't quite what they are now in any regards at that point. I mean, we really didn't even know, you know, how to properly utilize those and what that meant for our business, even though they were the cheapest that they will ever be and never to return.
Right.
So, you know, first step was how do you introduce your brand to market? And it really broke down to us coming up with a really solid street team plan. And I mean, literally walking to every single business within 3 miles of our facility. And introducing ourselves, letting people know that we're coming, You know, at that time we had a little offering to get them to opt in to whether it be our email list or potentially sign up as a member before the doors open. So for me, a launch is literally starting from zero and bringing it up to a point where hopefully you have 200-300 members in the fitness space. So when you open up your doors, you not only have a nice draft, but you have a community that you can speak to, and that community can help you grow.
So you literally walked around to, this is like just businesses in the surrounding area, or this is business and residential, or, you know, what was the strategy with that?
Yeah. So, predominantly I'd call it a B2B partnership plan. Yeah. That's where it started. Obviously not every business is happy to have somebody walk in, but it was really not a soliciting business. It was more like, hey, you know, this is who I am. This is what I do. I'm your new neighbor. I'd love to invite you to check us out. And no pressure, just making those introductions and then building off of secondary and third and fourth visits and getting to know people and becoming somebody in the community that people, one, know who we are, what we're about to do, and then kind of get them excited about it. This is not only targeting businesses, though. It's also being strategic about what communities you can get involved with. So going to the tennis centers, the pool rec clubs, you know, really anything that's relevant to your market. I want to be introduced to the managers, the community managers, probably even the security guards if they let you in their premises there, and get to know everybody, who the decision makers are, and just start introductions. That was the huge thing to make us successful.
What have you found to be successful with, you know, reaching out to connect with people? It, you know, sometimes it's challenging, right? Because you can get some pushback in terms of, you know, cold calling people or showing up. And like, for instance, if somebody showed up at my office and I'm in the middle of like clinical schedule, that just not, this is not happening. I'm not going to even have an opportunity to talk to somebody because we're so, you know, back to back. So, you know, what have you found in terms of success with, you know, reaching out and making connections within a local community?
Sure thing. Mostly making friends with the first person that you greet and not always going for the gut, AKA the decision maker right away, because decision makers are busy people. And I don't want anybody to get discouraged with that. You know, there's times where you're going to go into the same realm or business and look for the decision maker maybe 20 times and they're never going to be there, or they don't want to talk to you, and that's fine. So becoming friends with the next people, or, you know, making that relationship, I should say, with the next people, that's hopefully going to get you to that decision maker in a more pleasant way. And consistency is key, as always. You know, sending an email, maybe even a text message, might be a nicer follow-up than just walking in after you've kind of establish yourself that you're not just trying to sell somebody something.
You know, it's so easy to get, you know, wrapped up in your own business and not make the time to go and connect with people in your, you know, in your local area. And early on, in many cases, you have way more time than you have business. And you have the time to do it, but then there's also this sort of fear of rejection, right? Mm-hmm. You know, have you noticed that with some of the business owners that you're actually like consulting with, and they're kind of like, nah, I kind of just want to stay here. I'm good. You know, like, and you know how beneficial it would be for them to get the heck out of the office.
Yeah. Yeah. Chances are, if the owner's truly passionate about what they're doing and they're the best salespersons, as I would say, if they negate that aspect of being the person in the community, they're going to feel that hit because no one gets their energy and their excitement. I mean, who better to represent than you, the person who brought this to market in these circumstances? So when I'm working with certain people, I say, hey, I totally understand if you're not going to time-wise be able to be there, or maybe you're an absentee owner. So then I'm suggesting, okay, who's your best person that can represent your business? And they might not even be your manager. They might not even be your front desk person. They could be a trainer, you know, in the fitness realm.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's sort of, personality wise, right? Like I sort of struggle with this a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like I like people, but then again, I also don't like people in certain circumstances. Not that I don't like people. I like to do my own thing, mm-hmm. you know? And so for me, I have to like make a conscious effort to remember, oh, you know what? I haven't talked to so-and-so in a while, or I haven't grabbed lunch with so-and-so. I need to make sure that I'm, you know, really curating these relationships, which can be time consuming in many cases, when you do get busy. So you're right. It's something people have to focus on. And if you're listening to this and you're, if you're like a cash practice owner in particular, and you're relatively new, one of the best things you can do is get out and meet as many people as you can, get in front of as many people as you can. And the reality is that a lot of those people may not want to meet with you, but you still have to get your name out there.
Absolutely.
So what about other things you found? Are you guys like really into, you know, the, what do they call it? Like guerrilla marketing? You're putting your signs everywhere and all that stuff.
Yeah. So, you know, bringing a brand to market or a new service to a pre-existing market, it's really about how many meaningful ways can you become relevant? And sometimes that's not fully conscious, right? Maybe it's not the ad yelling at you on Facebook. Maybe it is that little road sign that you left there, or the sticker, or the card, or the Starbucks community wall. If you can get a little flyer on there, and every time somebody's fixing a drink, they see it. You know, chances are, and not chances, I know for a fact that it takes more than 13 contacts sometimes to get somebody to even remember who you are or what you do. So sure. if you level up on that and you're consistent with your exposure, you'll definitely be able to bridge that gap.
Do you feel like the ability to get your message in front of people is easier now with some of the digital platforms, in particular something like Facebook or Google, where you can actually get your brand message or content in front of people on a regular basis, sort of targeted? And it's not free, but it's not extremely expensive either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the consistency within the realm of a Facebook and an Instagram campaign that makes sense for you, as well as these guerrilla marketing activities, that's going to be your winning combo right there.
So, okay, let's talk launch strategy. So let's say there's a hypothetical new cash practice in a gym, right? So, you know, let's say the gym that you're working with right now, right? So, if you were to say, okay, if you're going to set up shop in here, you're going to, you know, put your stake in the ground, and this is your office. What would that launch strategy, do you feel it'd be the most successful for somebody in that situation to do within, let's say, a month or two before, and then within those first couple months of being in business?
Sure. Okay. I'd love the full 60 days, honestly. That just gives more time to consistently announce and bring your brand or your offer service to market. So for me, in a pre-existing community, one, I want full opt-in from the cooperating owner so that I can exchange email lists and start presenting my offerings and hopefully the community actually opens the emails.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah. So that's a real basic way. Now in the fitness—
You get some pushback from that though? I feel like people are super protective of their email lists.
You know, I think if you're forming the right partnership and everybody in the relationship sees the value, I don't see why that couldn't work. I know in some circumstances it's just not going to happen. And then additionally, you know, with that being said, maybe there's an easier, less intrusive way to start communicating. So for example, very basically, I'm going to post little tiny signage that looks good, letting people know coming soon, this is here, and this is my contact or my call to action to get engaged with it. Whether those be hanging around at the front desk or the lobby, also hanging them in the bathrooms or any break rooms or things like that. And most importantly, letting everybody on the staff know what's going on very clearly and concisely. I'm making sure the staff is fully opted in on me being there as well. So whether that be trainer announcements before and after classes, just so that everybody can educate on, hey, this is what's going on in our facility. It's a really cool offering. We know y'all need help with this. Go ahead and check out Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so who'll be coming by.
So once you've gotten past that, let's say that first 2 months, mm-hmm. Would you initiate a digital marketing strategy in that first 2 months, or would you focus more on the basically kind of guerrilla marketing in front of people?
Yeah. So I'd like to also partner with that digital marketing from day one. Hey, this is here. This is where it's going to be. You know, launch those simultaneously, really, because with that being said, the more exposure that you get, the second, third, fourth, fifth time that they're seeing that this is coming, they're going to be more opt to give it a shout, give it a try, you know, get in contact with you. And I think just the more exposure, the better. So don't delay. Honestly, at that 60-day mark, I'm really thinking that you should have both of those things launching and then have a really great structured plan on, okay, am I going to do a table setup every Saturday when it's high traffic time and let people know, hey, I'm really excited to be working with y'all. These are the things that I'm going to be offering.
That's a great idea. The, you know, the, I feel like that's in many cases a challenging part for anybody starting to practice in a gym is, you know, getting that buy-in, in particular the trainers and the coaches, right? Mm-hmm. You know, would you recommend that that practitioner maybe reach out to all the trainers and say, hey, you know, I would love to show you guys what I can do. You know, I'd love to comp a couple sessions of visits with me to really show you what I can do hands on. You think that would be a good option for people to do?
I absolutely think so. I think the more people that, especially on like a coach or a trainer, someone who's considered an expert inside of the facility that opt into what you have to offer, they're going to become your biggest advocates. Yeah. And then from there, with positive customer experiences, it usually spreads like wildfire. I know this will predominantly become a referral based business, but in order to get to that, those massive referral bases, you have to service a lot of people and you have to meet a lot of people and you have to do it with your passion and your intelligence and make sure they have a great customer service experience.
What about crafting a kind of launch offer? Do you feel like that's something that everybody should do when they first bring a new kind of service to market, where they should have some sort of, you know, offer of some sort that differentiates from whether like their typical offer price or a bonus or whatever might be involved with it?
Absolutely. I love in the fitness industry that we constantly offer a founder's rate. So maybe the first 100 people that decide, hey, you know, this is something for me, you can give them a permanently locked in price to appreciate them for taking a risk on your new service that they might not quite frankly be sure of at first, but you know what? They're going to give you a try. I think they should get rewarded for that on a long-term basis. So things like the founder's rate where people can lock those in, I think it's not only meaningful, but they also feel a part of building your business, which definitely helps you later on.
What are some of the mistakes you see with people launching new businesses?
You know, I think they get caught in the walls of their own business. I think that's the number one mistake that happens. And by that, I mean, you forget that all of your clients are outside of your doors. So you lose your steam or your momentum on going out and doing the guerrilla marketing, doing the fun things. Remembering that the only way that we can grow our businesses is if we get more people in the doors. We have to do a fantastic job of servicing who we have, but really it's about getting to a community base or a base where you're full. And then after that, the marketing doesn't stop either. We're almost always in pre-sale in the fitness business, and we don't let up until we're ready to cap our membership base.
Yeah, man, you're making me feel super bad about not getting out as more than I should in a good way. It's just, you know, it's funny. Just, you know how important it is. And when you first start out, it's definitely something that, I mean, anybody that's motivated to be successful, if you are willing to take a risk on starting a business yourself, you typically are willing to get the heck out of your office and go meet people, even if you're semi uncomfortable with it at first. But you know, even so, like when you really get deep into your business and it starts to become something that requires a lot more of your attention, it's so easy to really just move away from a lot of that time in the community and getting away from it. Do you feel like that's something that you've seen with some of the businesses that you've worked with is consistent, or people tend to just, you know, they don't prioritize it, but they really should?
Yeah. So I see a couple things happen during pre-sale. You know, it's a stressful time. Let's be real here. We're launching in a new space. We're trying to make sure that we have all of our business systems ready. We may or may not even be prepared on that end. And sometimes there's a build out going on. And then simultaneously, we're supposed to be doing, you know, solid marketing. And then we're also supposed to be worried about who we're closing at the end of the day. So there's a lot of distractions, but the people who consistently schedule times to be outside are the most successful. So, you know, as we move into next phases in the businesses that I'm working with, we're going to say, okay, you know what? Wednesday from 12 to 4, we're only doing this and there's no exceptions. And until we've hit our quota on what our goals are, you know, we're making that time, especially in pre-sale situations.
So is it focusing on, you know, getting out and connecting with, you know, people that you don't know that could potentially, you know, end up working with you, or knowing people that would want to work with you? Or is it, hey, I know I have a really, you know, a good relationship with so-and-so, and I need to make sure that you know, we get together just so we can touch base and see, you know, see how they're doing.
Yeah. I would love to be outside of my own network. I think, you know, to be really strategic with your time and go for the targets that it's like, all right, I know that these new strategic business partners and literally I'm going to like loosely call them my neighbors in the community. I'm going to say, all right, I know, you know, and this is not applicable for everybody, but I know Discount Tire rotates this many tires at this time of the day. And all those people are just sitting there, you know? So what if I could offer all of those people an incentive to come and try my new business? And they're not going anywhere. I'm already cool with the management. They don't care if I'm there. Now I might get exposure to 75 new people that, quite frankly, I would have never have talked to. That's just one example. I think there's more strategic businesses that you can partnership with, especially in the athletic sense. Moving forward, youth sports leagues are really huge. Doing table setups at youth sports league events are massive for people when they take advantage of that. And you know, we can talk further about, you know, what does that look like? Well, do you have a little booth that properly represents you and your business? It could be a folding table, a nice tablecloth that's branded, and an iPad. But if you don't have those things and you're not ready and you don't look professional, where are you going to be down the line?
Yeah. You know, those community events are something that, I feel like you can gain some really positive things from that. And then, you know, sometimes it can almost feel like it's sort of a waste of time, mm-hmm. in certain ways. And it's really hard to tell if it's going to be a really good fit for you unless you do it. And it's almost like it's sort of a numbers game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly. It's trial and error during pre-sales. I mean, ideally you would have 3 to 4 setups a week, and then you're quickly going to determine, all right, well, this had great traffic. These are people that I need to be talking to. Who am I partnering with? And, you know, what relationships are going to be meaningful going down the pipe? And then also, who do you think is the best target for you moving forward? And how are you going to consistently hit targets like that?
So if you are, you know, okay, pre-launch, everything is, you're kind of past that phase, you open your doors and you have this, let's say you have this, you know, short-term, founders member kind of offer. Mm-hmm. How long do you typically run something like that for if you're bringing a new service to market?
Yeah, so I'd like to wrap up that initial offering within about 90 days. I feel like having that definitive date to it, one, creates a secondary sense of urgency, not only for yourself, but for people to actually opt into it. If you don't define that, I think that you'll find people will expect it longer, and then you're not sure when to turn it on and off. And you don't want to tick people off. But if you define it and you make sure that you hit it, you know, maybe 30 days after opening, that's it. There's no more founder rates. That gives people the actual exclusivity that they signed up for in the first place as well. And hopefully that serves you correctly when you put it out there in that nature.
Have you ever, you know, tested or seen a difference between, like a time domain based offer for launching versus an actual like hard number on number of people that the offer is good for?
Yeah. So in the fitness business, we're definitely saying, okay, this is your pre-sale rate right now and or limited to this many members. So we've done it both ways. We've actually would say, hey, the next 6 weeks, take advantage of this pre-sale rate before grand opening. And then in other circumstances, it's like, hey, the first 200 or 300 people, or one or the other. So it really, I think, can be customized for your business and your market specifically.
So let's say you're okay, past the initial launch, you've gotten through this first couple months where, you know, your initial launch offer is, you know, it's not there anymore. You know, what are the areas that you see people do really well with like being like right after that launch phase and their business continuing to grow? And also on the flip side of that, what are some of the mistakes you see when people get to a certain number and then are done with that kind of launch special?
Yeah. So I think the most successful activity that I would continue once I've launched and I'm building and building is asking for referrals, creating a really good referral incentive. And then from that, continuing to offer an incentive to bring more business in. Because if you take somebody who was really injured and specifically as a physical therapist, really help them out, they're probably going to tell 5 or 6 people, but maybe they would tell even more if you gave them extra treatments at a discounted rate. And I think a lot of business owners stop giving referral incentives. Just they do it for a little bit and then it's gone. And people are like, well, I don't really get anything about, you know, referring more business to this individual. So it just becomes not really a thought for them anymore. They're happy with what they had. And now you're out of mind and you're back distracted in the interwebs of getting hundreds of Facebook ads elsewhere.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a great point. And it's something that I feel like can be overlooked quite a bit. In particular, like there seems to be like a right way to ask for a referral and a wrong way. Mm-hmm. What would you say you found the most success with in terms of, referral based marketing, and whether that be, you know, example of incentives that have worked well or just timing? Is it right at the beginning? Is it after they've been there for a month? Like what's the best timing with that you found?
Yeah. So to help you grow your business really quickly, I'm literally putting together a referral sheet that has 5 persons' names that might be interested in the service. And that way, or 5 spots, I should say, that might be interested in the service. And that way you're collecting 5 off of 1. I mean, that's huge. We know that we can't achieve usually that great of a number in other regards to marketing, but right after someone's had a great experience, they're like, oh man, I got to tell all these people about this. Here's their names. And do you mind if I reach out on your behalf? And now you have the authorization to do so from the individual. Great. Well, let them know I'm going to be contacting you. These are the kind of little conversations that I'm having in the referral stages there. And that's right away. You know, 5 for 1 person. And then from there, I might tie a percentage discount off of the next treatment and or a straight Visa gift card of a cash value that makes sense for your business. Both of those things work, especially if somebody, you know, somebody has to come back for several sessions. I've seen personal trainers do this and I know it works because they'll go, hey, if you give me 2 clients, I'll give you like 3 sessions free and everybody's happy.
Yeah, absolutely. And so for something like that, we've played around with different variations of this and we've never to that extent. Have you found that the follow-up on that, the best conversion be via phone call, email and a phone call? Like what's the mixture, and especially with some of these franchises that you've worked with, mm-hmm. like they obviously have very tested dialed in systems. And what's something that you've seen in terms of conversion on that that's worked the best?
Yeah. So my go-to in any regard is call, email, text. So I'm going to call that person. Chances are no one picks up their phone. I'm going to leave them a nice voicemail. I'm going to go ahead and email them and say, hey, so sorry I missed you. I left you a voicemail. Get them to call me back if I need to, or if I can clearly define, you know, the purpose of the call within an email and have my call to action set up, that should be sufficient. And then the next day, if I don't hear from either of those, I'm texting them. And I'm going to repeat this cycle up to 13 times all the way through until someone tells me to stop calling.
That's
yeah,
a lot.
I mean, and you know, the main reason why is we know that we lose most sales between 7 and 10 contacts, but everything after that, it's pretty golden. So if you give up early, you really are just giving up. People will appreciate your consistency if you're not being obnoxious and you're truly offering them value.
So how do you know if you're being obnoxious or not?
Well, usually you get the, are you done calling me?
Or they'll text you back like, hey, Dick,
yeah,
stop calling
yeah,
me.
I mean, I mean, for somebody who's launching a business, though, and having that sort of relentlessness, not because you're trying to cold contact somebody, but they expressed interest at some point or somebody they know expressed interest for them. So, you know, you don't have to feel shy about that. You know, hey, Jimmy mm-hmm. said that you can fix my back. Oh, man, I, you know, that's a really good reason to call somebody back, you know, and that's an interesting example, but, you know, I want to help you, you know, how can I help you get me back, you know, get back into their radar and get you in front of their mind so that when they're making decisions or they're thinking about how you can help them, you become the person, not the next person who is marketing them in Jezebel magazine here in Atlanta, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah. No, I love the idea of testing this out, and you know, and I think the timing of this is something we've noticed. You know, if we just as simple as saying like, hey, you know, do you know anybody like yourself that's active but's been dealing with a chronic injury? Let's say play tennis, or like they haven't been able to get back to playing tennis. That you think we could help, and they're like, oh yeah, so and so is kind of like that. But at least us framing who those people are is very mm-hmm. helpful, and then asking for them to have an intro with that person about who we could, you know, potentially help has been good for us. But we definitely haven't asked for, you know, five people with their contact information as well. What have you found if there's like metrics on that in terms of conversion rates? So if you have five people, how many of those people, you know, can you say like the industry standard is or actually end up working with you?
Yeah, I would, in my experience, I've gotten about 50%. So 2 to 2.5. So it can go well or it can go a little bit less. But if you're consistent and you have a really defined protocol for this and you really do go to those 13 contacts, you're going to get about 50% of your referrals back in the door minimum. You know, that's something that was easily achieved from us.
Man, 13 calls. That's just, you know, like they say, the fortune's in the follow-up, right? Like, you know, but being able to manage that, that's definitely something that, you know, like when we look at our business, and I talk to people on this podcast in particular, it's just my experience with what we've done. And I can tell you for sure, we do not call people 13 times, you know, and now I look back at like, damn, how many people maybe should we have, called a couple more times. So, that's interesting. So, okay. Yeah. From a referral standpoint, you know, with this and asking early on, it sounds like you guys do that. So is this something like, okay, cool. They've had a couple, you know, sessions with you or whatever, and they're feeling awesome and they're excited to, you know, come back in. If you notice mm-hmm. that excitement, is that when you say like, hey, this is the program we have going on. And if you send, you know, here's five people. If two of those people end up coming in, like, you know, whatever, this is the incentive that you get with that. And do you feel like that sort of, I don't know, in my opinion, in some ways, I feel like it almost can, if it's not presented correctly, can sort of devalue your specialization. I don't know, what's your experience with that?
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good question. I think it's really at this point, because you're building your business and somebody had a positive experience, I think it's addressing it in a way of, hey, as you know, I'm just starting. I'm building my business. And I would love for any introductions that you can give for me. You know, something along those lines, where you're not just asking for a referral because it's part of the sales process, but you're literally explaining, hey, I'm new to the community. I'd love for more people to get exposure to me. You know, you just gave them a positive experience. Why not dip into the person who's going to be a great advocate for you and then ask their friends and family?
So, I mean, that's just gold right there. Like, if you guys aren't listening to any more of this, you just rewind, hit the little like 15 second rewind button a couple times on iTunes and listen to that again, because that's really, really good. Is there anything else that you say? So like the referral, you know, simple asking for it with their contact information early on. Is there anything else in those first few months of people being in business? Because I really feel like getting that first 50 new patients within the sort of business that we're in, which is this kind of cash mm-hmm. cash practice, out-of-network practice, getting those first 50 people in the door that you know you're going to be able to just like have an amazing response with. Once you get to that point, the word of mouth referrals become much more predictable. So is there any other strategy you found that really are helpful in those first few months of developing the referral network and business network?
Yeah. So I've worked with a variety of big franchises at this point, on behalf of investors and then being a boot on the ground, and, brands like Orange Theory, Title Boxing Club now. And then, you know, you have F45 coming into market. And I think some of them do a really good job of giving you targets to hit. Now, I'll tell you straight up that if you don't have 200 members as a base in a fitness studio like that, it's going to be really hard to take your business where you want it to go. Now, 200 is a lot for one person to service, and I know all businesses are different, but that 200 number has resonated with me so much, because 200 people times those 5 referrals ends up being a really nice lucrative business. And that's kind of how it all ties back together. So I would love to set really high targets as far as how many people I can get looped in right in the beginning, and couple that with several different legs of marketing, not only your digital, not only your guerrilla, but also thinking about print and street signs and things like post-it notes and everything in between, and just make sure that we set a target so high that we don't have to look back and go, we screwed up when we had the time.
Man, absolutely. You know, I think that franchises like that do a really good job of branding and sort of like, and their swag as well. Like they seem to have cool stuff that they, people just end up, you know, becoming like a walking billboard. What have you noticed with some simple things like that, like physical products that you could maybe give to your new clients that have, you know, really good return on investment in terms of, you know, getting your kind of brand recognition out?
Yeah. So, always stickers. It's so funny. People love tagging everything with stickers. So, stickers are relatively cheap. Those sling bags that you see a lot of brands just do a giveaway with, pens. So these are all things that you could put together a package for under $5 if you buy 100. There's several different retailers online that can help you out with that, put your logo on it, and giving those things out pretty freely to people who are going to be advocates for you and let them wearing them in the community, as well as just a simple t-shirt. I mean, we know we can get really expensive with t-shirts and things like that these days, but one that's decent that might cost you about $8 when you buy it in bulk, it's got your brand on it. That's just ongoing exposure.
Who doesn't like a t-shirt, man? It's like, think about some of the things people do to get a free t-shirt.
Yeah, exactly.
They run marathons.
Yeah, no, seriously. And then, you know, simple things too that, this is really funny. It just, as we have these conversations, I think of all the crazy creative things that we've done in the past, you know, to represent a new brand in a new market. I've even partnered with Subways and pizza delivery places and put a flyer in every single Subway bag and or a sticker on every single pizza box. And I went and did that for the other business. And then I gave all their employees and the owners a discount.
Like a physical, you put a physical sticker on every box.
Yep. Hundreds and hundreds of boxes during those pre-sale times. But it's like, you know, we always in the entrepreneur world, we talk about grinding, but it really is like, you know, maybe that 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock hour where you're really exhausted, you could just do a mindless task. That's literally when I'm doing that.
Yeah. And, you know, people, it's good to hear that stuff too, because, you know, you're talking about a level of commitment and work ethic that goes into becoming successful. If I know that somebody is willing to go to a local pizza delivery place and physically put stickers on every box and somehow develop the relationship with that owner that they allow you to put a sticker on their box, like there's no way that person's not going to be successful, because they're willing to go to, you know, a significant, you know, do significantly more than most people are, within their business.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's awesome. Well, dude, this has been great, man. The launch stuff is just so fascinating. I hope the people that are listening to this, that are, you know, looking to start a practice, start a cash practice, especially if it's in a gym, you know, it's one of the things we obviously talk about quite a bit and something that we've had a lot of success with. You know, take this and listen to what Chris has to say. He's definitely done this in a number of different businesses at this point successfully. And I love some of the ideas that you were able to, you know, present today. So, you know, if people are interested in, you know, potentially working with you or finding out more about, you know, different options that you have to help them out, or just reach out, like where can they find out more about what you're doing and reach out to your company?
Yeah, absolutely. So follow us on Facebook. It's Beakinship, B-E-A-K-I-N ship, one word. And additionally, we just revamped our website. There might be a couple kinks here in the next few days, but you can click learn more on any of the services that I'm offering, and I'll be happy to schedule a call with you, go over where you're at. And this is completely complimentary, give you some direction. My goal is to bring you value whether you decide to work with me or not.
Cool. No, this has been awesome. You brought a lot of value to this podcast. So, Chris, man, we always, as always, we appreciate your time. And as always, guys, thanks for listening to the PT Entrepreneur Podcast.